Where's your favorite place to take College Game Day? And I say every time, Eugene, Oregon.
Hello and welcome, Ducks fans, where and whenever you are watching or listening, this is the Once a Duck podcast, where we bring you up to date with current and former University of Oregon athletes and give you never-before-heard stories about your favorite teams and moments in Duck history. We're coming off a Cal win, which is never an easy feat, especially on the road, but Sam, you were there at the game. My host, Samuel Tidrick Smith, and a lot of Duck fans were there. I was sitting at home watching. You could hear us over the Cal fans multiple times during the game, but it was not without a couple times that we were challenged, definitely down in the red zone a couple times, and got to see two turnovers for Bo Nix, which we haven't seen in a while, but not necessarily on him. Can't wait to get into it with you, but how you doing, my friend? How was the trip to Memorial?
Nick, I am doing well. It is one of my favorite venues in the Pac-12. It is gorgeous right there. The cypress trees in the background up on the hill. Plenty of fans watching from up there. A fantastic older building, but with a great view, a great game day experience. I would say atmosphere, but Cal Berkeley is not necessarily known for having the most ravenous of fans. But it was a fun time. There was so many Duck fans there. It was great to see people that I knew, people that I was happy to meet that day. A very, very fun time over at California Memorial Stadium.
Yeah, I think the most atmosphere Berkeley fans are getting up there, up at the top of the hill from everything wafting up that way. But it was a lot of fun, at least to sit and watch at home and see Duck fans enjoying the experience so much more than the Berkeley fans that were there. But hey, for our lightning yellow round, let's just go ahead and break down our favorite moments from that game with you, Sam, your experience being there, and me just kicking it at home. All right. On the clock, let's go. Lightning yellow round.
Well, you know, Nick, I really enjoy that stadium because very rarely do you find a stadium where you walk up the hill and it's sitting right there ready for entrance. And Cal Stadium really is. California Memorial Stadium, you walk up the hill, you walk on in, you go up and you can look out over the terrace and really see just the entirety of the North Bay right there. It's such a beautiful location, a beautiful spot. I was really glad to be able to just experience that atmosphere.
Yeah, well, it's one of the places I am glad I don't have to travel anymore for one of those very specific reasons. Is getting the bus up into that stadium was always this pain in the ass, and you're just sitting there as players, can't wait to get off the bus, can't wait to go and unload on Cal, and you know, it just makes everything a little bit weirder. And then getting out of there, oh my goodness, what a bottleneck. So, hey, glad I didn't have to deal with it.
Well, I'll tell you what, credit to the fraternity selling parking spots right across the street, because they really came through clutch when we needed them to. Gave us a deal, too. I really couldn't believe it. They were willing to give the people in green a solid little deal right there. It was so much fun to go to this game. Went with some family, went with my good buddy Leland, ran into friend of the podcast, Mike, there. Just an absolutely great time to see so many great Duck fans, so much energy right there, sitting back in the corner of the end zone across from the Oregon band. I'm going to say it again when we have more time, but I mean this, Nick. The MVP of that ball game was the Oregon band.
Oh, man, I believe it. You could hear them coming through loud and proud. And I was loud and proud just after the game on our good friend Sports Chat 503, Ryan Winter's little get together he likes to have after the games, and had a lot of fun chatting it up with people on there and talking about how damn close our predictions were, man.
Nick, I can't express how much I wish Cal's last touchdown would have been a field goal. Gosh, we were sitting there 21-10 at halftime. I was saying, oh, this 42-20 prediction feels good. Oh, that last touchdown broke my back. Good Lord. I know it didn't mean anything for Oregon fans. I know it probably didn't mean too much for the bettors either, but oh, I wanted that one personally.
And that's our lightning round. Yeah, man, this is why I hate predictions. I only do it for this team, this program, and this podcast, because man, I really just, if it weren't for that, because it makes you sit there at the end of the game and you're wishing for things that aren't best for the team necessarily, they're best for you. I get into that selfish mode and I'm like, dang, you know, I had a chance for my prediction. What, 38-17 looked pretty good for a moment there too. I was like, we could just settle down here, but you know, I believe it was a Patrick Herbert touchdown that broke that. And, you know, I can't feel bad about that. Who's not happy about a Patrick Herbert touchdown? Like, everybody from the tight end room to the offensive line to the quarterbacks, wide receivers, the entire team, even the defense, the picture on the sideline of Noah Sewell and a couple other defensive players already celebrating before he's even in the end zone. I mean, that was just the perfect cap on the offensive day that we had. And we're, you know, it wasn't given up easily to us either by Cal. They played us tough.
California came out and played a really, really tough ball game. They made that game exactly how they want to play it. It was gritty. It was tough. It was hard-nosed. But credit to Oregon. They hung through it. The first quarter was not pretty by any means. You get off to a good start with the interception by Addison. Credit to him. We've been talking all season. A lot of plays like that he's had the opportunity to make. He was able to make it on that attempt right there, and it was a beautiful interception on an overthrown ball. But after that, the Oregon offense really struggled to get anything going. Had to punt nearly immediately, had a four down and out situation down in the red zone. It was a tough go early on for the Ducks. They gave up a field goal to California, standing up in the red zone, playing pretty well on defense when it got tight, as they have all season. But then at the end of the first quarter, much like the UCLA game, in fact, Oregon comes out, has a long, sustained drive that carries over into the second quarter, first play of the second quarter, directly in front of where I was lucky enough to be seated. Bo Nix, read option play, just a beautiful little shimmy shake move on the linebacker, able to get into the end zone for six. And from there, Oregon's offense started to look a lot more comfortable. There were still hiccups, there were still mistakes, still turnovers, but once they were able to get that first score in the books, it seems as if the Ducks were able to settle down just a little bit. They were able to get things going.
Yeah, and it's so hard to bring your own energy into an atmosphere like that, even when your fans are most of the ones there. Sometimes you want that antagonistic force to kind of get you going, or, you know, get you dialed in that much more. And yeah, it was the team definitely having to come out in that second quarter and find some there and dig out 21 points straight. And, you know, pretty much, you know, from that point on, Oregon was in control of the ball game. And even then, you know, those two turnovers we could talk about just briefly. You know, I think most situations, most scenario, Franklin has that first one. And then at the end of the half, you know, Hail Mary opportunity, just, some people are going to point that out on the stat sheet at the end of the season, but that's one you just scratch right there, to be honest. You're just giving your team a chance and an opportunity.
Well, and I think you nailed it. I think that Bo Nix definitely had moments throughout the game that were questionable. I don't think the two interceptions were the most questionable plays, if that makes sense. I think that there were a couple of overthrows and the one ball that was very behind a very open Terrence Ferguson in the end zone. That would have been a touchdown right there. The fourth down play that was out, well, probably would have been a touchdown, if not a first down, if the ball's on the money. But as far as the interceptions are concerned, you nailed the nail right on the head when you said at the end of the half, Hail Mary. Sometimes that's going to happen. They have more players down there than you do. They have more guys ready for the ball. It just goes up. They came down with it. That is what it is. That was the shot you were taking. It's 50-50. The Troy Franklin pass attempt that ended up being intercepted, that's just a situation where you look at your receiver and you say, hey, I know you got it next time, but catch it with your hands. For God's sake, catch it with your hands. Put those hands out in front of you and bring that ball to you. Don't let it just come to you, because it did. It hit him directly in the chest before he could corral it. He was hit, ball's loose, taken out of the air by the linebacker. That's a situation where it's just fundamentals. Keep your hands in front of you, get back to the ball, make that catch. It's a first down.
Yep. Yeah, and it's one of those things where, again, Cal's just one of those places where we see some struggles from, you know, not just our team, but a lot of teams. It's a tough place to go. Bay Area trips are always tough. And I remember seeing some predictions from some of our fans that were up there in the 50s and just thinking, man, if we're able to do that, it's not going to be until this week, I think. But going and even putting up, you know, as much as we did at Cal, you know, it's impressive. And I think more importantly, we saw areas of our defense step up that needed to step up. Again, Addison having, you know, another big play. But seeing Noah Sewell being able to come up with seven tackles, I think one quarterback hurry pressure, and just looking, you know, a lot more of the form, I guess we were expecting of him in terms of this season. And overall, up front, I think our defensive line hasn't gotten enough respect. I thought Jordan Riley played one of his best games this season. I'm excited to see what he does this week. And Darlis, again, coming through. He's a monster and someone that, man, I'm, you know, one of those guys that I'm glad I'll never have to block.
Well, and I think the other member of that front seven that really did, he did earn the accolades in the Pac-12 this week. I'm going to give it to him here as well. DJ Johnson was everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
In that ball game, he was all over the place. Even plays where he statistically didn't make the play, he was still the one that created the opportunity to make the play. So many times he was the first man to Jade Knott. So many times he was creating pressure that forced the quarterback to step up and into somebody else's arms. He also did have 2 sacks, 2 tackles for loss, 3 total tackles. And he had a really, really big sack the drive immediately following the interception on what would have been the pass to Franklin. Cal, they got a first down quickly. It looked like they were about to start stringing something together, and a huge 9-yard loss on a play, courtesy of DJ Johnson. If he's not able to get in there and make that play, and Cal's able to turn that drive into a touchdown drive, very, very different looking ball game late in the second quarter there. But instead, Oregon is able to get the ball back quickly. They are able to then turn that into the Bucky Irving touchdown. If it's not for DJ Johnson being able to step up right there, the outcome, at least of that second quarter, looks very different.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, props to our defense. I mean, rushing defense has been their specialty all season, but holding Ott to under 60 yards at just 57. And, you know, even though it's 4.1 yards per carry, you were forcing Cal into situations, especially in that second quarter there, where they knew they had to score some points or they were going to fall too far behind too quickly. And stopping the run game is a great way to force, you know, especially, you know, a quarterback like Plummer, trying to get him to have to rally and carry the team is always going to be something that you're going to want your put Cal into this season. So that's been a winning strategy for all the teams that beat them, including the one we're going to play this week.
Well, you know, for Oregon in this ball game, I really did think that this was going to be a game where they would be able to run the ball more effectively than they were able to. It was very difficult. We obviously know that going up against a Cal front seven, Justin Wilcox team, they're always going to want to step up and make it difficult there. But if you would have told me before the game, Bucky Irving's only going to have 32 yards, I'd be very surprised right there. But the slack was picked up this week, and this is one of the guys I had circled, one of my players of the game, if not the offensive player of the game. Yes, Bo Nix, incredible week, 3 touchdowns throwing, 3 rushing. We all know how great that was. But the other player that I'm willing to give that award to, Noah Whittington.
Yeah,
Noah Whittington came out and played maybe his best all-around game as a Duck. 10 carries, 66 yards, a lot of really in-between-the-tackle kind of yards for him this week. We've seen a lot of him this season trying to bounce it outside, get to the edge. He was really comfortable taking the holes that were given to him this week. Also, receiving-wise, 5 receptions, led the team.
Yep.
67 yards, tied with Hudson for the most receiving yards, and a touchdown. A touchdown on a play that I just want to talk about for a second, because how many different players did it look like would have an opportunity to tackle him on that play? When he comes out of the backfield, he hits it with that little Texas route, beautiful little design. Everybody else is downfield. He's wide open after he turns, changes direction in the middle of the field, able to take it right up between the numbers. Not a single Cal player able to get to him, even though at one point he's surrounded by 5 or 6 of them. Really, really beautiful work there from Noah Whittington. An awesome game, both on the ground and through the air for him.
Yeah, just a nose for the end zone, too. Like, when he's decided it's going in, it's gone. And you'd love to see that guy with no hesitation, especially with this offensive line. Again, we talk about it every week. It's an expectation now that they're holding themselves to. But again, you know, damn, it's so much fun to watch these guys out there. You know, Big Solid doing his thing. It's so much fun seeing him pull around the entire offensive line and go out there and lead block. And you could tell just from his body frame and how much it's changed over his career that he's such an athlete now that when he gets out there in space, he can move with those corners. He can move with those defensive backs. And that's something that they're going to covet at the next level, including, you know, Bass's, you know, pass protection, man. It is so much fun to just watch him because it doesn't look that difficult. He makes it look easy with how fluid his footwork is and how calm he is with just maintaining an inside presence, knowing that he's going to win with his inside hand anytime someone tries to cross his face. And he's always prepared for if there's any kind of twist or game, especially with a young guard right there in Harper. Like you could tell that they've just got everything so in sync right now. And it's fun to watch. And Cal, I definitely expect it to be a little more of a test for us up front.
Well, in credit to the offensive line, credit to center Alex Forsyth and just their communication with Bo Nix at this point for a group that's been working together for what, all of 8 months now, maybe? They have been so in tune together. He understands, that being Bo Nix, how his guys play, where the opportunities are going to be. One of my favorite moments from the game this weekend was watching both Bo and Forsyth notice at the same time different things happening with the Cal defense, seeing them communicate, seeing Alex point it out, Bo picked that up and spread the information along the line. Really, really top tier communication from those guys. And that's something that I feel like we probably don't talk about as much as we should. How in sync this group has seemed and has been for a group that's been together for as little time as they have been.
Yeah, and a lot of credit to Coach Dillingham. Obviously, he knows the strengths and weaknesses of Bo Nix probably better than anyone else in college football. He's evaluated him for that much longer than everyone else. And, you know, going back to us facing him in Auburn, and it's impressive to see compared to, you know, and especially, you know, with Auburn and just firing Coach Harsin this week and seeing the trajectory that Bo is on now. And when he has the talent around him, that he doesn't have to just try and make everything, you know, all about him. It doesn't have to be him saving the day and making a miraculous play out of nowhere and putting the team on his back. No, if anything, he can defer to the playmakers around him and take what's there and what the defense is giving, and he's doing a great job of that.
Well, he has been, and throughout this game he took exactly what the defense was giving to him. I think of his 59 rushing yards, probably close to 25 to 30 of that was really on those, oh, something's available, let me go take it really quick. I saw a couple of designed run plays. Yes, he had the one good quarterback draw play that picked up about 18 yards for him. He also was able to have the read option along the goal line, led to two touchdowns, the QB sneak for a third. But Bo Nix, especially what I loved seeing this past weekend, what I saw in this game, is that not only was he scrambling for yards to pick up, he was also moving around in the pocket probably better than I've seen him move throughout this season. So many times it was step up out of the way, step to the side, throw in motion, step through, throw in motion. The pass to Herbert, the pass downfield to Hudson. Several of these plays that he was able to make throughout the ball game came under a little bit of duress where he knew he had guys in a different space. If he can move there, he had them. He did it throughout the day so well.
Yep. And again, like we mentioned, it's a credit to get your familiarity with your offensive line and trust. When you know you don't have to bail out of the pocket, you're comfortable stepping up knowing that they're not going to get pushed around. They're not going to get pushed back at the last minute. I mean, that's huge. And especially with a transfer and a guy we got to obviously mention because it's a huge theme for us this week going to Colorado is Christian Gonzalez, man. You know, probably his best game of the season so far. You know, six solo tackles, two assists, and a big special teams play that I know you want to talk about. And, you know, just especially going in, you know, getting to model the eggshell uniforms for this week going into Colorado. Love that choice by the marketing department there. You know, chef's kiss, perfect going into, you know, where he's from. And I think, you know, with Seven McGee announcing that he'll be transferring and entering the transfer portal, it's important for Ducks fans to remember why we call this show Once a Duck, Always a Duck, man. It's not always, you know, going to work out for everybody. It's not always the best fit, but that's what we have to keep in mind about our quarterback and CB1 on the other side, man, is these guys are coming from situations that weren't the best for them. And I always wish people the best, because I hope that for other fan bases to those players coming to Oregon, and I hope the players leaving, you know, on the best terms, and, you know, the best wishes to Seven McGee. But again, I'm so happy for the guys we do have, you know, Bucky, Whittington. It's so important to realize and recognize that it's a two-way thing here. And I think Oregon's coming out on the better end of these things, and I hope everybody finds the best place for them to hopefully prepare, get better, and go on to the next level and be successful.
Well, Nick, you just cracked an egg with two different yolks in it. I'm going to get to the first yolk, then we'll get to the second yolk. First yolk being Christian Gonzalez was fantastic in this game at Cal. He was tested a couple of times early on, and a couple of times Cal was able to get him. Cal is a very, very talented receiving core, able to make some big plays, but that didn't deter Gonzalez at all. He went out, as you said, 6 solo, 8 total tackles, played a very, very strong ball game. He really has kind of locked up one side for that Oregon secondary, which is so great to see. You're able to then trade out guys, as whether it's Bridges or Manning or Florence or whoever else you might have rolling in right there. You know that Gonzalez has one side completely locked down. And yes, I agree with you. The choice to have him be the model this week had to have been one that they've had lined up for months now. Right. They said, "Up, oh, Colorado week. We know exactly who's going to put on the uniform that week. It's going to be Gonzo." You made it look good. That number 0 in the eggshell, it's a good look. Glad to see he was able to go out there and model it. Now, Nick, I'll get to the second yoke. And it's one that I almost don't want to hit on strictly because it's such a Twitter thing to do. It's such an Oregon Twitter thing to do. And that's take 3 insignificant voices, 4 insignificant voices, and make a whole hullabaloo out of it, right? How often do we see that, right? In every article you read where they talk about Twitter outrage, it's 3 people, each with about 45 followers, being a little peeved. It's the exact same thing you're seeing here. 95% of Oregon fans are going to jump on and say, "Hey, good for you. Go do what you need to do. College football, as much as we love it, as much as we enjoy it, for the people playing it, for a lot of them, not all, but for a lot of them, it is a launch point to another opportunity, or at least an attempted launch point to another opportunity." So to get mad at somebody for not wanting to take that is, of course, bizarre, and is, of course, an opinion not held by many. But I do understand that everybody needs to quote tweet all 4 of those people and talk about how terrible a person they are and be able to promote how awesome they are for not doing such. Of course. It's important. We all need to be able to do that. So I, like everybody else, being no better myself, will say it here myself as well. That being, yes, it's weird to not want to give the guy the opportunity. It's weird to call somebody a traitor. This team before again, made up with a lot of traitors, a Minnesota and a Western Kentucky traitor who are doing some great work out of the backfield. An Auburn trader who's throwing the ball beautifully and has honestly got himself into Heisman conversation. And a Colorado trader who tried on the uniform this week, proved that it's great, has been playing lockdown corner. The point of this is to say none of them are traitors. It's ridiculous. Of course it's ridiculous. Now, can we please stop banging the drum and lighting off the smoke signals to let the villagers know that 3 people with 0 followers said something ridiculous? We get it. We know you're not that much better for pointing it out. All right, I'm done with this yoke. We can move on. Good Lord.
I mean, I wasn't even aware of this on Twitter. I have too many people muted. I was just talking message board strictly, my friend. But Elon appreciates your promotion, and so do those 4 people, I guess, are getting quote tweeted. But
you don't think we're paying $8 for this once a duck check? It's happening. Don't worry, people.
Hey, and if you want to get on sore subjects of Duck Twitter, man, transfers is low down on the list right now. I think if you really want to annoy people with a podcast, you talk about the Oregon playoff chances this early in the season at the beginning of November, which we at Once a Duck are not going to subject you to like other podcasts. I promise you that. Not happening here, buddy.
Oh, Nick, I love that you decide. Nobody else loads the cannon, aims it, and fires it across the bow quicker than Nick Cody. And gosh, do I love steering that ship. It is so much fun. Buddy, I will tell you this. There is no point in talking about playoff rankings in November. We all remember where we were last November saying, hey, this is looking pretty good right now. Then Oregon ran into a buzzsaw. So we're going to try not to do that ourselves right now. And you know what we're going to say? We're going to say, hey, Oregon plays Colorado this week. The Ducks take on the Buffs this week. We did ask people in our Twitter question what could be done to keep that spot in the rankings. We'll get to that question. We'll get to their Twitter answers. We've got a little bit of work we've got to do before that to put a bow on this Cal game. Oregon came out and won convincingly in a game where I don't think any person wearing white and green that day would say they had their very best day. And that's okay. This Oregon football team has looked better in weeks past. They will look better moving forward. As we've said, it's never easy to play that game in California Memorial Stadium. Very difficult, as Coach Lanning said. BYOJ, bring your own juice. Never easy to do that. But this Oregon football team did it. They did it effectively. A 42-24 victory over Cal.
Yep. And hey, man, you got to get it done. In the Pac-12, that's a tough thing to do. And our next guest knows exactly what that's like, not just from a Pac-12 perspective, but moving on, as we talked about with transfers, somebody that tried to find a better opportunity for himself, but we're always glad to have him on once a Duck. It's former running back Cyrus Habibi-Lekio. All right, joining us now, former Oregon Duck and Boise State Bronco, Cyrus Habibi-Lekio. Cyrus, we've been talking about transfers a lot this season and how important it is for guys to find their fit. You know, what went into the decision for you coming off, you know, your most successful season probably at Oregon in 2019 to go to Boise State?
Yeah, for sure. For me, you know, a lot of people, it could be, you know, coaching, it could be, you know, football, whatever it is. For me, it was just really just expanding my role. That was the only thing. It was nothing else. There was no personal issues. I still keep in contact with, you know, Cristobal, Mastro, a lot of those guys, and all my guys, you know, my brothers that I played with. But, you know, I was kind of, you know, a short yardage, goal line, red zone type back. So I kind of wanted to slim down a little bit and prove that I could, you know, catch some balls out the backfield, run some routes, and you know, basically work outside of the 20-yard line. So, yeah, that was kind of the main thing for me. But and also, too, you know, Avalos and the, a couple guys he took that are behind the scenes that were working at Oregon, they went to Boise State as well. So a lot of those guys were – obviously, I was super close with that Oregon, so it was a great fit.
Cyrus is somebody who was – he spent a lot of time in that student section while you were on the field for Oregon. I can just tell you, definitely when we saw 33 coming to the game, that was the moment we were like, oh, okay, yeah, points coming right here. Let's go. Very excited to see that. But actually, Cyrus, you came in as a part of the 2017 class.
Correct.
Actually happened to just be the year I got down to Eugene as a student as well. That 2017 class was a really big class, an important class. We've had several members of it so far with us this season. That was a class that was big because it was the first class to come in with a new coaching staff. First class to have to hold it together after Taggart left after that first year. What was it kind of like being a part of that group, being a vocal part of that group, being a part of a class that ended up having such an important role in Oregon football legacy and history?
Yeah, no, it's awesome. A lot of those guys, we have a 2017 group chat actually on Twitter. So we all stay in contact. We're all super close. I think it was super important. Believe it or not, I mean, there's still guys that are still playing from that class that are still at Oregon now, could be potentially playing next year. I think it was awesome, you know, just being part of that class. I think that we had a huge impact on kind of the, you know, no offense to, you know, the other teams, but it was kind of like a reset, you know, to the culture. And we kind of brought back a winning type culture. I feel like our class, with the help of, you know, Herbert's 2016 class and the upperclassmen as well. But I think we all kind of came in, like you said, it was a fresh start. It was a new coaching staff. So we kind of wanted to change the culture a bit, and not only just change it, but bring some of the winning, you know, culture back. And, you know, we came off a Rose Bowl, you know, a Red Box Bowl, and a couple of Pac-12 championships. So it was super, I mean, such an honor just to be a part of a pretty legendary class. I don't know if you guys saw, I think it was Javon Holland. He tweeted like the 2019, you know, the team, the Hall of Fame. I mean, I think we were a pretty great team. And, you know, I know we had that, I'll always call it a fluke loss to Arizona State, you know, just cause you know that, but, you know, that team was pretty good. And I think, I mean, if you look at the roster, a lot of the guys were 2017 guys, younger to middle class classmen. And, but yeah, no, like I said, just an honor. It's so cool to be a part of class of 2017. I think it's, I think they'll will be pretty remembered, I guess, in Oregon Duck history, football history.
Absolutely. And in that 2019 season, one of my favorite games up at, as I refer to it up here in Seattle, Autzen North, you had some highlight reel plays that will not only stick with me, but I was probably the loudest guy in that stadium at the time. What was that like? First of all, what is it like to have the ability to leap over a defender? What's it like to be a highlight reel player? And what even better, what's it like to do that against the Huskies?
Oh, man. Especially against the Huskies, like you said. I mean, we still to this day, I'll kind of, you know, there's somebody walking by with some UW gear, I'll kind of give them a go Ducks, or, you know, just kind of, you know, yeah, exactly, thumbs down, you know what I'm saying? There's actually, I can tell you the, after this, I'll tell you the background behind that. If you,
yeah, go ahead.
Know about it. I'm not going to, you know, I'm just going to say, I feel like I started that, but we'll go on to that later. So, but anyways, oh man, that game was nuts. It was like a movie. It was raining, right? Obviously in Seattle, but we started warming up and they brought their band behind us while we were warming up. And I'll never forget, they were playing, some guy was playing the trumpet and he like was playing behind, and he kind of tapped my helmet while I was like, I think CJ went first, you know, it was the first rep or something in warmups. And I just kind of turned and looked at him. And he was just like avoiding eye contact. And I was like, oh, okay, it's this type of game. You know, I've only played them at Autzen the year prior, and I know they wanted to beat us, especially after that that overtime win. So, you know, it was just crazy. I just remember, you know, my name was called. CJ was hurt, and Travis was a little banged up. And I remember just getting on the phone on the sideline with Mastro, which I've known since high school. I was committed to him at Washington State prior, so we've always had, you know, a relationship. And he's just like, hey, man, you know, it's time to go. And I always talked to him. We always talked about, hey, you know, potentially playing outside the goal line. I was told him, you know, I'm ready for whenever, but I know my role. So, you know, I'm going to just try to do it as best as I can at that role. But he's like, hey, now's the time, you know, show it off. And I think it just kind of a switch flipped. And I'm like, all right, it's go time. You know, next thing you know, I'm running option routes out the back, you know, out the backfield, jumping over people, all this. But like I said, it just felt like a movie. And I just felt like, honestly, like my legs were just numb and they were just working. Like, I just felt so like just let's go, you know, let me run to Panay and Shane's side and, you know, and just go off. And I'll never forget, it was the middle of the game. And Panay, you know, before the play starts, he turns around and he looks back. He's like, just, and it was a play to the other side. And he's like, just run this way. And I was like, all right, it's that type of game. Like, you know what, I'm just gonna, we're aborting all assignments and we're just doing what we have to do to win, you know, whatever we got to do. So, man, that game was legendary. I remember just playing and looking up and they're like chopping up a stuffed duck and ripping out the cotton. And I'm just like, wow, this is like, as a, you know, as a 6 to 8 year old kid, like dreaming about college, like that was probably my college moment. Like, wow, like this is college football, you know, like the rivalry, the heat, you know, the passion and all that. So that game was, it was great.
Well, Cyrus, I mean, I have to ask now, because everyone who's going to be listening to the podcast is going to be going, oh, come on, we can't not hear about that. So I guess we do have to ask the question, how did Dubs Down start?
Okay, so I remember, so this was 2018. So Dylan Mitchell, you guys remember Dylan Mitchell, right?
Oh, yeah.
Beast, great, one of the best receivers I've ever played with. We're in the locker room one day, and he's from Memphis. And so I told him, I was like, yo, I was like, you know, they throw up the Dubs, turn it to Memphis. Like, this is my, you know, like, this is me. Like, so he's like, all right, cool. Yeah, bet, I'm going to do it. And then he scored and he did it. And ever since then, we just started practice, whatever. Hey, what's up, bro? Like this to each other, you know, in the locker room, you know. And then that game, you know, like, it was pretty heated, and it was pretty like there was a lot of chattering back and forth. It was pretty like it was a super heated match. I obviously, especially because of the year before. So after, you know, everybody's just chucking it up. And I think, you know, maybe I don't know if everyone caught on to what Dylan was doing before, but I think everyone was just straight up dubs down. Like, so yeah, that's kind of the whole, I remember telling them, you know, before we played them, I'm like, yo, bro, when you score, like throw up Washington and then flip it to the M for Memphis, because you're from there. And he's like, all right, cool, I'm going to do that. So then ever since then, I think we all just started throwing it up.
Man, I love that. Yeah, by that next year, everybody in all of the Oregon's fandom was throwing it up. And the best part is our podcast started that very first week, Husky Hate Week 2018. So our very first episode. So lots of legends were made that day, my friend.
Oh my gosh.
I got to steal this question before Sam does, because he gets asked that fantastic dubs down question. But of all your uniforms that you got to wear as a player, which was your favorite that you got to wear as a Duck? No Boise stuff, sorry, man.
Hey, no, don't trip. It's all good. It's all good. Man, I do really like that UW uniform you're wearing. When we played them, that was cold. But to me, I mean, I'm Polynesian, of course, the Ohana. Honestly, my favorite is probably 2018 UCLA. I don't know why, but the elephant print, it was just very subtle. Like, it was clean, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, Chip was coming back home, you know, like he was just like, we're wearing all black. And I was just, I remember before I play games, like, you know, it's just like, I don't know. I would always like kind of try to think of the week of like a caption for my Instagram post the game after. It's just like a thing I would always do, you know? And I remember, I think it was like a post I put like all black. It's a funeral. Like, we're putting that, you know, him coming back, like that whole era to rest. Like, this is a new era. That's just kind of something I had in mind, but the all black, you know, Chip came back. There's just something about it. I don't know. And like I said, it wasn't super complicated. It wasn't nothing crazy. But that's kind of like my style. I love like kind of black on black, little subtle details. I mean, I love crazy neon stuff as well. But to me, yeah, the 2018 UCLA, UCLA Jordan game, plus the Jordans we got with them. I mean, come on.
Cyrus, to bring it back to this week a little bit, Oregon takes a trip to Colorado coming up on Saturday, a game the Ducks are supposed to win, but college football, any weekend, anything can happen. We all know this. When I think about you and your career, one of my favorite games, one of the ones that sticks out most, was 2019, Colorado coming into Autzen Stadium. If I'm not mistaken, it was one of those really late night, maybe even a Friday game, just wearing all yellow. The crowd in all yellow. One of the most fun experiences I had as a Duck fan, just because it was such a raucous atmosphere that night. Defense was absolutely balling out. And you yourself, you had 3 touchdowns in that ball game. What do you remember about playing the Buffs? What do you remember about Autzen that night?
Yeah, there was a certain play that sticks out to me the most. I believe it was on the goal line going towards our tunnel. That we come out of, and it was like a jet sweep to Jalen Red. And I just remember, you know, I knew who my guy was and I had to block him. I just remember just lead blocking for Jalen Red, and I just depleted the guy. Like, I hit him and he like flew, like, I think it was like 7 yards. Like, he just fell into the end zone. And I just remember just like looking at him and just nodding my head and like just yelling at him. And I just, looking back on the film, because I was making some highlight tapes from, you know, my career. That was probably one of the games that I just was the most intense. I don't know what it was about it. Maybe it was playing under the lights or something like that, but I don't really talk too much on the field. I smile a lot, but I was pissed off that game. I don't know why, I don't know what it was, but, was talking a lot of mess that game. And that play to me stuck out the most, just because, I think it represents what the whole game was about. I think, I mean, it wasn't the score. It was a lot to little, right?
It was a lot to a little. I can say that right now.
Yeah, and you know, we just like, it was
a lot to a little.
You know, yeah, and it was, you know, we were on a roll, and I remember reading some stuff, you know, that, oh, trap game maybe or something could go down, college football, you know, like you mentioned. And so I was just like, all right, well, we got to come out and just destroy this team. And that's kind of what it was. Guys were flying around. People were getting depleted, and it was amazing.
Now, as in amazing moments I had in my career, the thing that usually stands out to me above all else is winning the Rose Bowl, because there's nothing like it. What was that experience like for you when that game's over, you guys come out victorious against Wisconsin?
Yeah, like I mentioned earlier, kind of that college football dream kind of like moment. It comes in spurts when you're playing. It's just like, oh, wow, I'm really here. Man, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've watched TV growing up and see guys with the big championship shirts on, you know, hat to the side, roses in their mouths, like, you know, just like the best experience ever. The confetti, my whole family was there. I'm from the Bay Area, so it was not too far of a drive, but this game, everyone made it. Family from Texas, you know, LA, all over Oregon. So my whole family came out, and just an unreal experience. They were a hell of a team. I know they had Jonathan Taylor that year. Oh man, there was that receiver. He was pretty good. That's in the league right now as well, but they were a great team. And I just remember I played a lot more special teams that game. And man, I remember just being on kick return, and you kind of do a count. You count how many people are on the front line when you're playing kick return to count who you have to block on kickoff. I remember your coach Bobby Williams called a play, and I counted, and it was like, I had this guy, and he was like 6'5", like 290 pounds, like wearing like number like 97. And I was just like, let me recount again. Let me make sure this is my, like, hopefully it's not my guy. And I recounted, and he was definitely my guy, and I gave him all I got, and I stood him up. And man, I think that also kind of signifies the game. It was just such a battle, that game, going back and forth. And I'll never forget standing on the bench with Panay when we were on offense, or when we were on defense. And I told him, I said, Panay, bro, I was like, I have this weird feeling something's going to happen. Like, there's going to be a fumble. And then Brady Breeze, I think he stripped it or recovered that fumble, and it kind of flipped the whole game. And I remember just looking at each other, and like, he grabbed me and like started shoving me, like all hyped up. And I don't think he, like, I mean, he was like 18 at the time, I think, and I don't think he realizes how strong he is. Like, he's like a little kid in a grown man's body. So, and we were on top of the bench, I almost flew off the bench, but he was just hyped up. He threw his helmet on, and then I think that's when Herbert just started going off, right? And man, just such a dope game to be able to hold the Rose Bowl trophy, like I said, the confetti, playing in the Rose Bowl, that was my first time. So just an experience I'll never forget. To be able to say I'm a Rose Bowl champion is very, very special.
Well, Cyrus, I'm sure that Nick is going to come around to asking you what it's like to run behind a guy like Panay and those guys. But a question I had for you, and this goes back to an experience I had in 2018. The first ever Oregon road game I attended was at Cal 2018. You guys ended up getting a big win. One of the things that really stuck out to me and I remembered were how many people had number 33 jerseys on in the stands on our side. Before that game, I remember that we had been talking with a couple of guys we knew in that locker room. We were able to secure like a couple of pairs of player tickets to make that trip. But I remember the thing was, everyone was saying, yeah, no, you guys can go if we have extras, because everyone else is giving theirs to Cyrus. He's bringing everybody that he can to this one. Man, what was it like to have such a group of supporters by your side, whether you're playing at home, playing on the road? Yeah. What was it like just to have that kind of a base and a support system behind you?
Yeah, very blessed, very fortunate. You know, they say it takes a village. Literally, I come from a village. Like, oh, man, I have so many supporters, so many people who have my back, so many people who want to see me succeed. And when I do fail, you know, they're right there to help me, you know, get back up. Yeah, so when we have those games in the Bay Area, the Stanford and Cal has my mom's number, the ticket office, they call her. It's kind of wild. So they call her and they work out a deal with tickets, like in bulk. That Cal game, I think we had like a size of a wedding there. It was like, I think it was over, it was like around 200 people or something like that. It was something crazy. Like the whole section was, you know, it was bought out just for me. And it was super cool. The same thing with Stanford, but I was hurt. I didn't, that 2019 year, I didn't play. I had a back injury. But yeah, man, just to have that support system. And even when we play in Autzen, we played at the Dallas Cowboys Stadium against Auburn, I always have at the very least like 10 people showing up, which is great. Which is, like I said, I'm very fortunate. You know, both my sides are, we come from, my mom and my dad were both born in their country. So both very cultured backgrounds. You know, I think football was, so I grew up in a split home, and football kind of, when I was young, was kind of what brought my family back together, because they had to attend my events. Right. And they would both come and watch it. And, you know, each year, like, you know, it was kind of cool. My family would, they would move closer and closer together in the bleachers. And then by the time I was like, you know, in middle school, they're all together and everyone's having fun. And football, you know, is such a blessing. And it was such an amazing opportunity to bring my family closer. So I'm super thankful for obviously my family for supporting me, but the game of football, I mean, shoot, I can never do anything to repay that.
Yeah. And, you know, it might just be my perspective, but I think the only support on the football field that's better than having your fans out there, especially for a running back, is having a great offensive line. And you definitely had some really talented and NFL level guys. What was it like running behind that left side in particular with, you know, as you mentioned, Panay, but also Shane Lemieux?
Yeah, they're both, you know, doing really well, and they're making great careers in the league right now. There's nothing like it. You know, I mean, if the play is to the right and there's nothing there, I can always count on the left side. And as a running back, it's skill, but it's very instinctive. You gotta have great reaction time, right? Great instincts. And to be able to have an O-line to where you create kind of a natural instinct to almost flow to the left side when it's in trouble. That just shows how great the O-line is, you know, especially that side. And the right side was great too. I mean, they both were great, but I mean, just those two guys are high caliber guys. And like I said, there's nothing like it. I didn't really experience anything else like it. It was just like, those guys are high level guys. Those guys are playing a lot in the league. And I mean, any team in the NFL is lucky to have those two guys. So to be able to, for them to be together and practicing every week and create a, you know, a bond and relationship, it's great. I loved when Herbert would slide, you know, my protection to the left side, because I just get free chips. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, like I said, nothing like it. Those guys are they're out of this world.
Cyrus, the last one I've got for you before we let you go, man. I don't want to keep you here all night by any means. Question I got, man, is tell us about an Oregon experience, not necessarily on the field, but either in the locker room, in the facility, on campus, just something fun that you remember from your time in Eugene that maybe we didn't get to see play out in front of us, but definitely holds a place in your heart or your mind.
Taylor's Bar and Grill, baby, man. You know what I'm saying, bro? I mean, I'll never, after the spring game, 2018, man, we all hit Taylor's after, I'll be honest, you know. And it wasn't, obviously, like, there was some stuff with the football team prior to that, but whatever stuff went down, I don't know, before I got there. But man, I just remember pulling up, and I was just standing, like, you guys have been to Taylor's, right? Obviously.
Oh yeah. Oh, yep.
Yeah. For sure. Okay. So you know, you walk in and the left is kind of the seating area, right? And there's like, in the far left corner, there's that kind of like booth type, you know, corner cut table. I remember just standing up over there and just looking around, like, you know, just at, and I mean, Ward was there, Mariota, LeGarrette, like all these guys, all my teammates, and you know, Ward and my dad are taking shots, like, you know, like, you know, it's just like such a dope, you know, guys I grew up watching, you know, and they're all there with my family. My teammates are all dancing, having a good time. You know, it's spring, so, you know, the weather is great no matter what. And, you know, it was a great day. We, you know, successful spring game. No one was injured. And that right there was just kind of like a moment that really, although it's in Taylor's, but it kind of like, you know, like, you know, it was just like such an awesome experience to see, because like, all my boys are having fun. Like, yeah, we grind, we, you know, we do all this, but at the end of the day, man, football is a sport. We play it on the street, having fun, you know. And to see, you know, Fat Mac from Florida, Nick Pickett from, you know, Los Angeles, you know, they're dancing together. You got guys from Texas, from Georgia, you got, you know, Marcus Mariota, like everybody, you know, just from Hawaii, people, like everyone just all together, all because of Oregon, you know. And they all brought us here together. And I just thought, man, this is one big melting pot. And everyone's just having fun. Sabrina, everybody, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was just a, you know, a dope time. And that kind of just was a special moment for me, because I just really realized, like, man, like, football really got me here. Like, this is such a cool moment. Like, I'm playing at a top university with all my best friends, my family. And so that moment in Taylor's was was probably a huge one for me.
Yeah, man, there's lots of people that have had special moments at Taylor's, but not everybody's ready to go and admit it on a recorded podcast. So I thank you for that. I'll close out with this one, especially since it's Once a Duck and that's the theme of our show. You are going this weekend. I hope we get you back in Autzen here pretty soon, but you are going to see a couple other former Ducks play this weekend, including your coaching staff. So tell us what it's going to be like and what you're expecting down there for the Miami Florida State game.
Yeah, I mean, I think I haven't been really following those two too much, but I know it's a pretty heated rivalry game. It's sold out. I don't think it's like Autzen at all, but you know, I'm excited to go check it out. But hey, I've been a big fan of the U too. I think all of us have in our era growing up. They're pretty legendary, right? You know, watch a lot of guys play in the league. So just down, you know, super excited to go experience all that and see some of the guys play. I know Trey Benson, when he came in, I mean, we call him Meathead, but he's just like, you know, super just yoked, you know, just raw talent. And I think this year he's really finding out who he is as a back. There's just so much talent and so much strength and speed in him. And I think it kind of took him a little bit to really control that. And now he's patient behind his blocks and all that. So he's doing super well. So it's kind of just good to see. There are a lot of the guys that I'm watching play were younger than me, so they're super mature now. And just to see them, all these things that we worked on in the off season and then perfecting their craft. It's cool to see it on the big stage. And then, you know, what's today, Thursday? Yeah, tomorrow I'm going to try to get a juicy pump in with Phil. You know, I haven't heard him scream in my ear for a couple of years, so I kind of need a reset button right there. And probably go see Mirabal's family and go say what's up to Coach Cristobal. And, man, super cool. Like I said, football is such a blessing. It's an opportunity for family, new family members to get together and really become family, if that makes sense. So, yeah, go check out those guys. Go crack some jokes, you know, talk about old times at the O and just have a good time. I don't know who I'll be rooting for, but I'm just going to wear Oregon gear. So
there you go, man. Hey, I know I'm rooting for you to fill the sleeves. That's for sure. Thank you for joining us, man. You're a great interview.
For sure. Thank you, guys.
Once a duck, always a duck. Hope to see you on the field soon.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you guys.
Oh, my goodness. Man, what a moment. I mean, I that's all I ever wanted out of this podcast, Sam, is to find out the origin of the O, the origin of Dubs Down. We're getting to the bottom of everything out here, man. We're going to find out where the bodies are buried under Autzen Stadium one of these weeks.
Oh, my goodness, Nick. We've basically reached your Alexander the Great moment, just weeping a tear because there's no more lands left to conquer. My goodness. What else is there to possibly learn out here besides what we already have? Usually we would take a couple minutes in between interview ending and segment, but we're rolling right through right now.
Yeah, no, we don't even need a restart or reset. I'm ready to go. And well, where do we go when we run out of information, Sam? We go to the opinions of your favorite app, Elon Musk's very own Twitter. And I know, okay, gathering myself. This week, we asked Duck fans, your Oregon college football team is number 8 in the initial college football poll, which, you know, at this point means nothing. But what do the Ducks need to do this week in Boulder to keep that rank or even move up? Let us know what you think below, and we'll read your answers on this week's podcast. And make sure you're following us at Once a Duck or individual, at Nick R. Cody, and at Samuel101TS before we delete our Twitters. And you can also find us on Instagram, too. So before everybody jumps to the next social media, we want to know what you have to say. And as always, if you're watching on YouTube, that's the preferred method. So let us know down in the comments, and those will always get priority. But, hey, we've got some interesting responses. The one I liked probably most is at @duck_fan68. Jenny said, every Duck player on the field must leave everything they've got on the field. Don't let off the gas. Dilly needs to continue creating new plays. to keep our opponents guessing. And I think that's a great answer because that's exactly what I think Dillingham is expecting to do. Put some new wrinkles, particularly out here this week, that will scare the opposing teams that you have for the rest of this November onslaught that's coming. That's going to hopefully be maybe even some misdirections that they have to spend a little bit more extra time in the film room watching in these coming weeks, because that's some of the best ways to get defensive coordinators confused and not get their team prepared for what you're actually going to throw at them.
I think that's definitely a good jumping off point. It's a very poignant, a lot of what Oregon should certainly be focused on this weekend in Boulder. One that I've got here from Penny at Duck Scribe. It's a four-parter, which I like. Very, very well written out. Very easy to decipher. One, creative diversion plays on offense. All about it. Two, pick sixes. No problem with the defensive touchdown over here. Three, block Colorado's punts and run them back. Obviously something that is ideal. Four, smile and love being Ducks. I think that's one that our last guest had down to a T. Smile and love being a Duck. I think if these players can come out, play with the energy they have been throughout this season, even if they're not able to make every single one of those things happen, it'll still be a productive day in Boulder.
Well, and I know this episode and that interview have made me smile as a Duck. And hey, I'll be smiling a lot more if this next prediction comes true. Chris K at Chef CK 23. Whoa, easy there, Nick. Don't let CU score any points and don't put our foot on the brake after third quarter or so. We've done that a few games this season, but this Saturday score as many points as we can, and it is 100-0. Man, I would be smiling if we even just got a shutout. I'd be extremely happy against any team, but going to Colorado, it's tough. But man, if there's ever an opportunity, I mean, a team that has an interim coach and is going through the type of season that Colorado is, it's possible. I don't know about 100 points, but it's possible.
Another one I've got here from Joshua Blunt at Joshua Blunt 10. If the D line gets home more frequently, it'll be a lights out defense. Our point differential will be much more impressive. I believe ranking will go up because who's going to be able to score with the Ducks? Also, better red zone offense couldn't hurt. And here I think nailed a couple of factors that we've all been talking about a lot this season. The D-line has been very stout. They've been very strong. They've done a good job stuffing the run throughout the season. But if they can get home just a little bit more, couple more sacks, couple more quarterback hurries, that's going to continue to put teams in even a worse position. And then the red zone offense, mostly probably limit penalties, honestly. If you can do that, stop the pre-snap penalties, Oregon's offense is going to be in a really, really good position for this game and moving forward.
Yep. And I want to thank our audience out there that continues to give us great replies. I promise in the future weeks, we'll try and read more good to make them sound a little bit better. But we got through it. I'm excited for this Colorado game, and we'll quickly wrap this episode up previewing them. I think it's important to note that this still is a Colorado team that beat Cal, albeit in overtime. But as I've said before in previous episodes, Colorado is a tough place to play. And even reminiscing with it with D'Anthony Thomas a couple nights ago in Spaces conversations, we were talking about just how for skill players, it might actually help. I mean, he was probably that much lighter to toss up in the air if I even made it down to the end zone to celebrate. But the big guys, man, I know I was huffing and puffing. It was a lot harder to deal with that elevation. But I hope if this team is as conditioned as they look, particularly, I mean, at the offensive line where we have some guys that just look absolutely like studs right now, I'm excited to see how they perform in these conditions, how they bring their own energy for another 12:30 kickoff and get on the road and, handle the Buffaloes that, you know, if you take care of things right away and you don't make mistakes, you can make this a statement game, especially playing at the same time as probably the biggest game in the country, which people will be watching. All people are going to really watch out of this game besides Colorado and Oregon fans is going to be other football games. So all they're going to see is the scoreboard from this. So you got to make it count.
I would love to say that just because Oregon's playing on ESPN, the national audience will be watching, but the number one team and number three team in the country are going to be playing on CBS at the exact same time. And I would be lying to you, Nick, if I wasn't planning on at least having two screens up during that time to be able to do a little bit of both at the same time. Truly a fantastic matchup occurring on CBS over on ESPN where the Ducks will be playing. Hopefully, it's not even that close. hopefully people can see that bottom line score bug and know that that's enough, because I think this Oregon team is very, very capable of absolutely just being able to do whatever they want to this Colorado team if they come to the game paying attention, if they come locked in. One thing that I saw in the media this week, one of the talented offensive linemen from Colorado made a point to say that when Oregon's defense is its most vulnerable is when the ends can tend to get out of position just a little bit. That's something that Colorado wants to be able to take advantage of. This is going to be a game just like against Cal. It really is going to come down to fundamentals. It's really going to come down to, can Oregon beat Oregon? Because if Oregon beats Oregon, they're going to destroy Colorado. I don't think that's a question. They have to be able to come into this game absolutely certain of what they're going to do and how they're going to do it and do it effectively. That being said, Colorado, they can throw some different things at you. They've had four different players who have thrown a ball this season, three different quarterbacks who have played significant time. Strout, McCowan, Lewis, they have each all attempted at least 24 passes. For McCowan and Strout, each over 100 on the season. 729 yards for Strout, 600 for McCowan, two touchdowns, two interceptions there for McCowan, but 5 and 4 for Strout. Each guy provides something different. They bring a different edge to the game. Lewis, the third ranked of those quarterbacks passing wise, he's their leading quarterback in terms of rushing. So they're definitely going to trade guys out. They're going to give you different looks. They're going to provide different options. The running back, Smith, 354 yards on the season. He's played some solid ball. And Tyson, the receiver, 333 receptions. They also have some guys who are very talented, especially in the return game. This is one place where I think Colorado really could probably cause some damage, and it's their ability to return kickoffs and return punts. Believe it or not, this season they've had a whole lot of opportunities, especially to return kickoffs. No slight necessarily against them, but they have been the recipient of many kickoffs due to allowing lots and lots of points. Yeah. And in their game last week against Arizona State, they had a freshman who was able to definitely get out and do what he needed to do in the special teams game. Look, they played Arizona tight. It was a 42-34 ball game. And in that ball game, Colorado was not just completely manhandled by any means. It wasn't like it got out of hand or got close late. This was a team that, behind the punt, the return abilities of Tyson, was able to, he had a touchdown in the return game, four returns, 131 yards, an 88 yard long and a touchdown. That's a guy you got to be careful for. So watch out. Number 16, Jordan Tyson, both out wide and in the return game, a dangerous player.
Yeah. Well, at the end of the day, this is a team that has struggled to score points this season, aside from last week, but then take into consideration playing Arizona State, the one other team with an interim coach right now, just two programs that are kind of simultaneously struggling this year to find some wins and find some continuity between not just their coaching staff, but the players. Again, that quarterback position, you know, it makes or breaks you in the Pac-12. And we've seen that, especially with Oregon this year, with that improved quarterback performance from Bo Nix. Man, the more I look at it, though, do I think last week is an outlier? Because before that, without overtime, this team was lucky to score 20 points against Arizona. They only had 17 against UCLA. They've struggled this season offensively to get points on the board. And if Oregon plays, like you said, against Oregon to their full potential, if they stick by that motto Coach Lanning's kind of instilled in the program, I expect big things this weekend. And I really hope and expect Colorado's lowest number of points and, you know, their highest amount given up. But we'll wait for predictions. What more do you want to talk about in terms of guys you expect to perform at a high level this weekend from our team offensively and defensively?
Well, you know, I think this is going to be a big game, especially for the running backs. I think that this could be a really big rushing game for the Ducks. I think that a guy like Bucky Irving maybe had a bit of a down week last week. This will for sure be his opportunity to step up, really put up some big numbers. I think Whittington's going to as well. I could see Nix on the ground being able to do quite a bit. But I really think that this will be the kind of game for Oregon where they could put up a lot of points. just playing their game, continuing to distribute evenly as they have done. I think that much like with the tackles this season we've seen on defense, most of these games where Oregon has played really well defensively, you've got a leading tackler with maybe 7, 8, and then after that a fall off and a lot of guys around the 4-3 range in terms of what they've been able to make happen. I think we could see the same on offense, a very, very evenly distributed game. I'll be extremely curious to see if we'll have Chase Cota to watch on the field this week for the Ducks. We know he went out with what looked like potentially a knee discomfort against California. If he can play, he'll be a big piece to this one. But if not, Oregon has clearly shown they've got a deep receiving core. They're not afraid to use it. I expect balance more than anything in this game between Oregon and Colorado.
Yeah, one key position I am interested in looking out for is kick returner. And who we use back there and who we utilize, especially with, you know, as you mentioned, the injury to Cota. Franklin having a little bit of scare in the first half there with what looked to be, you know, a hamstring or, you know, a little muscle cramp, hopefully. And, you know, you don't want to have to risk a player like Bucky Irving or Troy Franklin on some of those high impact potential touches. But again, if they have that ability and can be smart decision-making wise, there's the potential there for big plays. So that's something to look out for. I'm very interested to see who plays back there. Potentially Chris Hudson getting a couple reps. But, you know, it's that's a tough, tough duty. One of the toughest things to do in college football. And, yeah, especially with the way the rules are implemented now, you know, knowing when to just take the yards that are going to be given to you or give yourself a chance. It can get you into some trouble, but I'm very excited to see that. Well, with that, it's the time as I've said, I hate the most because you end up rooting for something at the end of games or even at the beginning that just doesn't feel right. What I really want and what I expect is Oregon's best performance of the season. I want to see it. I want to make sure that this team is locked in, that they aren't looking forward to the onslaught of November that we know is coming. I want to see them focused entirely on Oregon and able to kick out Colorado 52-6. I really want a shutout, but I don't see it. I see us being bend but don't break. I think we give away a field goal in maybe the first and then the fourth quarter. But honestly, I do expect us to keep them out of the end zone and for us to get to it a lot.
I really like that 52 number, and I'm kind of frustrated you went and took it just like that. I was really, really circling that total myself. But you know what? Let's just turn that up just a little tiny bit in this one. I think Oregon, they'll be able to score at will. I think that Colorado will probably get some points on the board, but it won't be until later in the ball game. Final score, Oregon 55, Colorado 13. I think that we will see a late touchdown from the Buffs, a couple of field goals from both teams, but I expect Oregon to dominate pretty handily.
Well, let's see, man. It always ends up being us, you know, we get in that fourth quarter, maybe sometimes in the third for some of these games. We sit there, we're sometimes texting back and forth thinking, man, if this happens or this happens, and then all of a sudden this happens, we are completely set and we're going to get one of them one of these days. But man, oh, so close again. And hey, at least we are putting out great content aside from our picks, and nobody hopefully out there is putting too much money on our input. But we appreciate that you're here. We want to know who you want to see in future episodes. And make sure you give us a like, subscribe, follow, give us a 5-star rating on wherever you listen to your podcasts, and stick around for much more great content. And especially the Real Sam has been putting out, man. These are doing great. So if you aren't following us on Instagram, you're missing out. So once a duck, always a duck. And let's take it up to Boulder.